maybe that's a only presentation without Bert Tanner this afternoon. So let me give you the next minutes some ideas why and how could we design and use precision lysimeters. So this paper summarizes the experiences in lysimetry of Johan Funk and me. Johan Funk is a hydrogeologist at the Joanneum Research Center in Austria, Styria, and my background is mechanical engineering. I'm working in soil scientific instrumentation since 23 years in Munich, Germany. So why could we use lysimeters? Modern lysimeters measure water with a resolution of 0.01 millimeter. So with this, you see the evapotranspiration, rain, dew, hoarfrost, any water parameters. And I don't know any other instrument with such a good resolution. Modern lysimeters have unperturbed true field soil monoliths and measure the interface to atmosphere, not somewhere above the ground, but directly at soil surface. Depending on the instrumentation, those lysimeters easily solve the water balance equation and are scientific tools for water resource management, agri-research, cultivation, and climate change. Now, with a typical field monitoring setup with low field disturbance, we may measure the true field situation, but how precise can we quantify fluxes? It may be easy to measure visible water, but how to measure precisely fluxes in soils? Both, of course, is potential driven, as water always flows from regions of higher potential to lower potential in free water as in the soil. In soil, it would be nice to have a defined surface, as we do with lysimeters, a defined volume, and clear upper and lower boundaries. So the upper boundary is clear, but how to build the lower boundary? Let me proceed with a few flip chart to illustrate what I mean. Using lysimeter means a cut of a certain volume of soil. Assuming vertical fluxes, we simply cut the field flux into a certain depth. So we would have rain. The soil drives the water down towards the groundwater level. Those fluxes are driven due to the matrix potential differences and the current water conductivity. If we would cut the soil capillar structure at the bottom plate, we would ignore this. If we would use a filter bed at the bottom plate, we would have there an artificial groundwater layer. So in wet seasons, the lysimeter would be much wetter than the surrounding soil. And due to the capillary fringe, it may happen also that the soil gets above the bottom plate in anaerobic condition, which may cause wrong data and wrong leakage water. In dry seasons, we have the other way around, the other problem, that we have no capillary contact to the groundwater. So there is no capillarizing water at the bottom plate of our lysimeter. So the lysimeter will fall drier in the dry seasons. Regarding the annual balances, this error may compensate. It may be, but it must not be the case. Now what to do? We should imprint the field situation into the lysimeter. Let's measure the field matrix potential in the field and inside the lysimeter and compare it simply. If the lysimeter gets wetter after a rain event, we suck off the water into a drainage barrel. And if it's drier, we pump back the water into the lysimeter. The next slide shows the mechanic principle. The reason why we're using suction cup rate instead of plates is the lower clogging risk. So the sediments, if so, would happen at the bottom plate but not at the porous plates. Let me show further details at realized projects. Here you see a typical problem when taking monoliths. Where is my mouse? at this site. We took this monolith 2 weeks ago. When we select a site, we should at first take the soil monolith visible down to 2 meters, at least 1 meter deeper than the lysimeter, is to prevent that on one hand we have, for example, this soil should have a 70 centimeter para-brown earth, but we had only here gravel, because in former days it looks like a street was planned below our lysimeter. So the only thing we can do is simply we take our monolith from this site initially and select another one. Then if we know the soil profile, so here you see it's bad images, sorry for that, the soil surface down the first 70 centimeter, and then we have a gravel soil and sandy and gravel mixture. And when we know the soil profile, we can determine and the depths and the construction of the lysimeter. After the excavation, the lysimeter is turned upside down to mount the control tensiometer inside the lysimeter, and also these silicon suction cups. Now we install the field reference tensiometer, which goes into this maintenance well, and put the lysimeter on precision balance cells. To tighten the lysimeter with its enclosure, we use a shear force-free membrane, you see here. This customer wants to check either our lysimeter or a precision precipitation gauge, I don't know what, we will see. Now, let me lose some a few words of the lysimeter site in Wagner. This is a field where we have precision farming and organic farming, and we want to have the standard farming procedure above our lysimeters. How to do this? Now, first, this is a lysimeter monolith, you see at A. Then if it's buried completely in the enclosure, you see here, a very small gap only, so it's pretty invisible from soil surface. We have the removable upper ring, so we simply remove it and backfill it manually. Then we cultivate with machines, and then you see no island effects. This station has also a combination with grass reference evapotranspiration lysimeter, which is located here. Now, that's a technical design 20 years ago, where we designed a 48 lysimeter measurement site, 2 meter high monoliths, all weighable. And if you look in the sealer, we have to determine if there is any preferential flow paths along the cylinders. We made a fractioned soil bottom plate of the lysimeter to be simply sure that we have no preferential flow paths. The next generation has been, for example, 8 or 10 lysimeter in one station, like here in Wielenbach, where we have contaminated soils to determine the risk of contaminated soils, as well as in Naples or in Oberschleißheim, close to Munich. Now, there is a lot of other stations I list here, and in the name of the steering committee of the lysimeter research group, I want to invite you for a cost-free membership to this group. So if you are interested what we are doing with lysimeters, more details you find under www.lysimeter.at or .com. So that's the lysimeters we installed the last 20 years. Now let me lose some a few words of a very new theme in Germany, which covers the problems of global climate change. The long-term observations are necessary to improve our knowledge on the complex biosphere, hydrosphere, and atmosphere interactions. Therefore, we are aiming to predict, to detect, and to analyze the impact of the global change parameters like temperature, rain, CO2, sea, and N cycle. Therefore, we establish a natural climate gradient some soil cores from a very cold site here in Graswang, which is on a altitude of 950 meter. So low temperature, lot of rain. And we take those lysimeters, which is a microcosms of soil, plant, root, water, and bring it simply to a warmer place like here in Rottenbuch, and as well down to Fendt, which is even lower. So with this, we take those microcosms and can simulate what would happen in future if we would have less rain or higher temperatures. We take, yeah. So in Bavaria, we have three sites, and this concept should be spread. So here you see a map of Germany, and the last slide showed here Bavaria, and we plan to expand this all over Germany. So it's a network as a scientific tool for soil scientists or microbial scientists. The technical design, that's a principle. We take the monoliths of a cold site, leave some non-treated here, and take them to the warmer places. And of course, there are some with manipulation and some only for control purposes. The technical design to receive true field conditions looks this way. So here we have the maintenance well, the enclosure, the lysimeter with the sensor installation, burying the lysimeter stations in the field. So this is a site with 36 lysimeters. You see here one, the places for the lysimeters. Now let me give you some results of the Wagner station. How good are lysimeters for energy balance? Or how true do we find the temperature profile from the surrounding soil inside our lysimeters? If we look back to this slide, you see that every lysimeter is surrounded by the natural soil. So it's no more a silo construction, but an individual lysimeter construction. Now, the results are quite convincing. Oops, sorry, it's the wrong direction. If we regard the comparison temperature gradients in a lysimeter, this axis is a three-year lasting project. So with a depth of 35 centimeters inside the lysimeter, and there we measured in 35 centimeters in the true soil profile, and there you see that fits quite good. Also the depth of 60 centimeter fit pretty well. 90 centimeter gets sometimes more tricky, here and here, and 180 centimeter gets especially in winter time tricky because we didn't insulate the maintenance well very good. But at all, the temperature deviation is only about 2 Kelvin, which is pretty low. In lysimeter sila constructions, you may have 5 Kelvin deviation, which is much more dramatical. One minute, yes, thank you. Okay, also I show you some results on the water balance. So we did some tracer experiments with bromide. So we have a 100% results of the bromide. We see all the bromide that flows through the soil. So the lysimeter works well. This is a typical water balance for one day. So that's been the 17th of September this year. So here you see the lysimeter mass measured on the balances. Here you see the lysimeter mass plus seepage water because we have an own measured barrel here. So you can, and here we have the evapotranspiration time. So with this, you can solve the water equation quite good. Now, the measure of snow is also an issue in our alpine regions. We can have those snow pads. They work sometimes, sometimes not. You see here we should have 30 centimeters of snow cover. Above the lysimeter we find, here is the lysimeter, we find the 30 centimeter, but not above the snow pillow. So if we regard the results on the lysimeter, we see those cracks. The lysimeter should give this red line, but in reality, because of the shear forces of the snow cover, we get such results. Therefore, it's a need that we cut free the a Lysimeter by a mechanic. Ah, the video does not work. Okay. And we have a special circular movement of the Lysimeter, so we get the true data from those Lysimeters as well. Now I would have some final questions. What to do? Shall we use Lysimeter, yes or no? What to do in forest with active root distribution and growing roots? Shall we use Lysimeter, yes or no? I would be careful with this. How to quantify fluxes in slopes? How big are the errors with gas chambers for C and N measurements? And shall we give non-evaluated data on a web server for other scientists, or shall we evaluate them initially? How deep shall a Lysimeter be in accordance to what? And is one square meter enough to model a complete field or a region? So that's questions for you. And please ask your questions as well. And thank you very much.
Here with questions. Can we turn the lights on in the back, please? Somebody that's back by the switch. That's the end of the scheduled talks. The A3 business meeting is follows this. But one of the person that hasn't talked that's been mentioned many times in here is Al Weiss. And I've asked Al if he'd like to say a few words. I asked him 6 months ago if he'd like to say a few words, and he said, I'm not sure, but I talked him into saying a few words. And as a concluding remarks, and as you all know, Al is an entertaining speaker.
Thank you. Maybe building up things that may not be justified. I wish we weren't here today under these circumstances. I'd rather use is rather than was. I think part of the function of this meeting is to help many of us to deal with the loss that we deeply feel. Obviously, we've said many, many wonderful things and true things about Bert, but we have an emptiness. And hopefully this will be part of the healing process. Because the healing process takes a lot of time. It's not something that's, a light switch that you turn on and off. Very difficult. People try to, characterize, Bert, and we've seen many, many examples. And I'd like to give you my perceptions. First, he was an alpha male. He was the alpha male. And so that if you ever was by the booth and Bert was there, there was a mini seminar going on about whatever topic that person that he was talking to about. And in the evening at about when they closed the thing about 10 to 6, 10, 8, 15, 20 people would be gathered, and the guards would, try to shoo everybody out. And I got to wait for Bert. We're going to meet him here, and then we go to someplace and eat and have interesting evenings. Sometimes, it's very hard to characterize personalities and people, but that's been done in different ways. And there are certain commonalities. One is honesty. Truth. And another thing that wasn't mentioned directly was a unique way with the English language. And that was unusual. And also, as was mentioned many times, a zest for life. And with this unique way for languages, sometimes you just laugh. And sometimes, you wouldn't feel very, very tall. And for example, if you said to Bert, hey Bert, this smokeless tobacco thing is not really good. It has a warning on it. And then he'd look at you and his eyes would open wide, and he'd put his hand on your shoulder and he'd say, partner, that's a good point. And I'm really, you're right. But you know, sometimes all the stresses and all the things that I live under, it really helps me. And it's my personal business, and it's my responsibility. That's what he meant to say. But he never said that. With this use of words and stuff, he could make you feel so small that you'd have to look down to see up. And so, but it was only a temporary thing, because again, he was really a very kind person. I'd just like to relate two stories to you. When his dad was ill, and he was in the hospital briefly, Bert went to visit him, but he, not only to see his dad, but he had this problem with some sort of exchange problem, and he couldn't solve it. So what happened is that go into the hospital room with Champ, and all of a sudden it ended up that they had papers on the bed, on the floor, and this went on for, I think, for a day and a half, or 2 days. But by the end of the time, he got it solved. And that was very, very gratifying. It was gratifying on two levels, because, I don't know, for any of you who have children, you know that at one time, there's a conflict with your children. And that's the reason, and that's almost universal since parents have had children. And that's been a long time ago. But one of the reasons that is because the older generation is growing up in a certain environment that's very, very different than the child is growing up in a very, very different environment. Champ grew up in the Depression, and everything was very, very tight then. Bert grew up in the 60s, you know, and as Larry said, you know, with his T-shirts and stuff, had a very, very different view of the world. And there was a time there was a conflict. But here, the parent and the son were on the same level. And the parents, as parents, you want the best for your children. And here the parent saw that he had provided a background. And the son saw in his parents' eyes acceptance. And something that children always want to receive from their parents is acceptance. The other story is, this was the last time Bert went on a big skiing trip, and they were, you know, climbing up the, you know, the mountain and with their skis, and then they camp overnight in the cabin, and then they'd ski down the next day. And he said he was the last person, and he was huffing and puffing and stuff, and he said it was old age. You know, old age is finally getting it to him, but obviously it wasn't the old age that was getting to him. And then in the cabin that night, they were talking about you know, different things, and someone had saw a movie called The Bucket List. And The Bucket List is about two terminally ill cancer patients who, you know, realizing that they're terminally ill, want to live out, you know, the dreams that they had put in the bucket list and stored. And then Bert starts telling me some of these things that he remembered, and I can't remember them. And he remembered all these different things about, and he says, I got to see this movie. And the tragic, you know, part, not only did he have to see the movie, but he lived part of that movie. But he had such a full life, and he was just a wonderful person. Thank you.